Here we go. Folks, this is your host, Cameron Ivey of Privacy Please, and thank you so much for tuning in each and every week. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. Tell your friends about it if you like it. If you don't, let's just pretend you didn't listen to it. Thanks again for coming in, and we hope you enjoy the show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Privacy Please. Cameron Ivey hanging out with Gabe Gums, as always. And it's just another lovely Monday. Gabe, how you doing, man? How was your weekend? How was RSA?
Decent. I had to travel like a few hundred miles to see you, but you know, it's okay.
It's true.
Weekend was all right. The show was great. We're gonna do a whole big show wrap up. We've got mm-hmm. some clips from the show. We've got a couple of interviews from the show. We're happy to do that. But I think this week we've got some folks who I don't know were at the show It started this week. Yeah. Should we go ahead and do the thing and bring them into the lounge?
Yeah, let's bring them on in. Co-founders from Termageddon, and let's get them introduced.
All right, here we go.
Hey, what's going on?
There they are. Hello, everyone.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Good.
Awesome. We were just sharing with our audience, which is not a live one, I should add. I use that phrase because sometimes people are like, wait a second, there are people in the audience? I mean, unless you count the cats and the dogs, the only people in the audience are the ones that will hear this in the future.
But we'll be doubling that audience because we have cats and dogs as well. So.
Hey, there you go.
Very nice. it's a pleasure to have you both. And we were just chatting and we were talking about last week's security conference at RSA. I don't know if you guys had a chance to go out there.
I didn't, but I do know some people at the ABA who did get to go. And I know our Science and Technology Council had a pre-RSA meeting that I guess went super well. So they said they really enjoyed it, but I didn't get a chance to go, unfortunately.
Right on.
Did you make it?
I did, and I was doing some math. And the math is over the course of the last 22 years, maybe 23, I've attended 18 RSAs.
Wow.
It is a staggering number that I wasn't sure if I should celebrate or.
And usually.
Be careful, they'll ask you to plan it.
Considering that my default reaction wasn't just automatic celebration, we could just sleep.
So Donato's obviously the privacy expert over here at Termageddon, but my experience is dealing with like website policies because I built websites for companies in downtown Chicago for a long time. And I just want to note, I've been to dozens of industry or events in my industry. And I don't know about you, Gabe, but like it's been so nice seeing people that I've met at other events again and again and again. It's like, I don't know. I have like friends like that I meet up in different parts of the world. And it just, I don't know, it's kind of special.
Over the course of 18 years, of 18 of these events, there's probably a dozen, maybe more folks whom I met there. And sometimes I only meet at other similar events, right? So it is always good for that. But you dovetailed us into where we normally start with these conversations. So why don't we do the following? We typically start by asking the following question. Tell us about yourself. However, I'm going to turn the tables on you two just a little bit here, if we would. Hans, if I can have you ask Donato that question and then vice versa, we'll get the show started that way today. How about that?
Sure.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
All right. Well, Donato, thank you for joining the podcast today. And I'm curious, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Donato. I'm an attorney licensed in Illinois and a certified information privacy professional. I'm a legal engineer at Termageddon and also the president of the company. So I'm responsible for generating and keeping up to date thousands of privacy policies. I'm also the chair of the American Bar Association's e-privacy committee, a member of the Science and Technology Council and the Cybersecurity Legal Task Force. And I'm also a fellow of the American Bar Foundation and the chair of the Chicago Bar's Privacy and Cybersecurity Committee. Hans, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself.
These days I'm better known as Donata's husband, given that type of backdrop or background you just provided. I ran a web design and software development company in downtown Chicago for 7 years. I sold that agency to work full-time with my wife, Donata, where we help people get website policies.
There's a lot there to start with, a whole lot there to start with. I will not hover on the relationship part of this yet, but we'll be back to that. We'll be back to that. I often work with my significant other, and I find it interesting as well. But there's a lot in what you said. So if I'm picking up on this right, it sounds like one of you kind of come at this from a policy and legal perspective, and the other comes at this more from what I might phrase a more tactical kind of application of controls perspective. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's true.
So if you didn't share physical space, I assumed you'd probably still share some mind share. What problem was it that you saw together that you said, okay, we need to go solve this problem?
Sure. So from my end, when I was in private practice, I had clients asking me to write their privacy policies and terms of service. And this was before all of the crazy privacy laws, even before GDPR. And I noticed that the process, at least for me, was very repetitive. So I'd ask my clients very similar questions like, what data do you collect? What do you do with it? Who you share it with? And then I had, 10, 15 templates that I would Frankenstein together. And it was just an awful, awful process. And I really hated it. And I thought, hey, maybe there's a way to automate this. And then we were talking over dinner. We were dating at the time. And we were talking about dinner. And Hans, you shared your frustrations too.
Yeah. So on my end, building websites for clients, we build them a site, contact forms, analytics tools, Facebook pixel, everything that helps website owners gain leads and attention. But then when it came to getting policies for their website, they would be like, well, I have no idea what to do about that. Can you just copy one for my competitor's website? And, I'll admit it. I was doing that for a little while. Didn't think much of it. I was like, okay, fine, if that's what they want me to do. But it started to feel a little bit awkward. And certainly over a dinner date, I realized, I told her, it's like, yeah, I just copy and paste legal docs whenever my clients ask. He was like, you realize how bad of an idea that is. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. And so we create a term again to be kind of like a middle ground between, hiring an attorney, which is obviously the best thing you can do for your business. But if you don't have those types of funds laying around, Termageddon is a great alternative. It's a comprehensive generator for website policies.
You made it past that date anyway, even though you were out there committing all kinds of naughty violations. Like, if in the process of dating someone, they told me they stored all their passwords on a little notebook, like, I'm not sure where it goes from there. I'm like,
just standard questions.
This might be tough for me to really see us.
Well, I got him to change his practices. So that's won me over.
That's good. So we know you can actually, we know that together, certainly you guys can actually make this thing happen. Mm-hmm. I've got some more questions just kind of on the problem side of this though. Because GDPR in particular, which you reference, I think really brought the website policy things right to everyone's face. Like, plenty of websites always had privacy policies, all kinds of other policies, plenty. Like, they existed. But GDPR really just threw policies and controls in our face as it pertains to websites. What was the rest of the world doing that like, it feels like there's a gap between what everyone was doing and what all of a sudden the European Data Protection Authority told us we needed to do. So is everyone else catching up, or is this still just this gap of folks behind us that are, no offense, Hans, copying and pasting policies all willy-nilly?
Well, I think there's a big gap from a regular business perspective and also even from an attorney perspective, where people don't realize that policies are not just something that's randomly somebody comes up with. It's not just random disclosures. A lot of people, still use FIPS as the template for privacy policy disclosure requirements, which I think is just so out of date. And I think the biggest gap lies in the fact that privacy laws dictate what disclosures your privacy policy needs to contain. So they're no longer just random documents of information that you think might be relevant to a consumer. They're much more based on actual requirements that are created by these privacy laws, rules, regulations, cases, things like that.
It's kind of astonishing how few people realize that a privacy policy should provide the disclosures you're required to make under the specific privacy laws that apply to you. It's privacy laws that dictate the disclosures. Therefore, as a website owner, you have to find out the laws that apply to you first, because only then can you determine the disclosures you need to make.
That is actually very interesting. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, because I'm thinking about, in practice, my own privacy policy, which, you know, we're in the privacy and security business, and I'm trying to think, you know, how did the process begin in terms of connecting those two dots? I believe, as I sit here right now, those dots are well connected, but I don't think they started that way. I think for us, the problem began simply as we needed to perform this activity, for what it's worth, explicitly because in order for ourselves to operate in other technology marketplaces, right? Like for us to upload our technology to like the Google Play Store and the Apple Store, they were like, well, you have to have this type of policy on your website as well, right? And I find most of us probably come at these kinds of solutions through these problems of someone else is making me do the thing. So that's my next question is who's making us do the thing? Who's making us do the thing? Like my customers make me do the thing. But ultimately, when someone shows up and they say, Hans, then I have this problem. Why are they finally addressing the problem? What's that impetus for them to go, I have to do this now?
Yeah, so I think we're seeing a shift in this. But I do think you're right, Gabe, that it's Facebook that when you're wanting to run ads, or Google AdWords where you're wanting to run ads through like Google search network. And from there they find out they need policies and they go frantically searching on how to cobble together a privacy policy. And sometimes the terms in that example. Also when having a website built by like a professional agency, the agency should bring it up at least in discussion. I know a lot of agencies these days are even getting it documented that they told their clients about their potential requirements to have a privacy policy, just so the agency can save themselves, you know, and protect themselves when building these sites for clients. I do think, though, as time goes on, we're seeing more and more people that are just building a website in general and are just asking themselves the question, do I need a privacy policy or a terms? And I'd say it definitely seems like there's a lot of confusion just between those two documents that get posted on a website. Like, they often are interchanged, I would say, between the by the average website owner. So there's definitely a lot of room for education in this space. You know, but there's companies out there that exist that are trying to provide that to an audience.
And I think now as the privacy landscape changes, people are looking to have a privacy policy to comply with privacy laws and to not get fined or not get sued. You know, more and more companies are getting fined or finding themselves in lawsuits because of privacy law non-compliance, and people are trying to avoid that as well.
I am immediately mindful of the following as you brought back multiple times, you know, organizations creating their own web presence and turning to agencies, et cetera, for that. There was a proud tradition that still exists of attempting to create websites yourself. But there's also just a lot of technologies these days where, you know, you swipe your credit card, you push a button, you've got a site. How well do those organizations help address the, okay, you need a privacy policy, right? Like, because my bias in this thinking, even before you answer that, is, well, are they just going to copy and paste?
Yeah, so some website building platforms do provide privacy policy templates. So for example, WordPress. If you install WordPress onto your website, it provides what they call a privacy policy template. You know, I'm a huge fan of WordPress, not a huge fan of the template, because half of it is just section titles with no text underneath. And unfortunately, that's not very helpful for people. I know Shopify has a privacy policy generator too that they offer in conjunction with their site building tool. Unfortunately, that one does not comply with any privacy laws. I've taken quite a close look to it. So it doesn't really help anybody because, again, if you're trying to get your website policies in place to avoid those fines in the future, using those types of resources, not really helpful towards that point. But I think they're a good effort to just alerting people that they do need website policies. And other website builders do this too through blog posts or other resources. But WordPress and Shopify are the ones that do provide their own templates.
Yeah, and I would say their web building platforms know it's growing in importance. You know, GoDaddy recently interviewed me for a discussion about what website policies are because, you know, I do believe web building platforms and hosting providers do want to educate their audience. It's just, you know, there's a lot of confusion right now. You know, since I did that recording, you know, Iowa passed their privacy law. Montana and Tennessee just passed the Senate, are likely going to go into law as well. I mean, people also need to realize that you can't just have a static policy anymore. It has to be constantly updated with new disclosures if new privacy laws pass and apply to you.
Nice. All right. Sorry for, I'm doing a remote location in my car, special, usually not the case. I had to have some house cleaning and can't be inside. So anyways, nice to meet you guys. One of my questions that I'm curious about is obviously ChatGPT is very big right now. And I was curious if your thoughts on it, number one, and number two, if you or anyone from your company is actually using it in a positive way, and your thoughts on that.
Sure. So this is one of my favorite topics of all time. So actually,
as of the last 3 months.
Yeah.
As of the last. but I recently did a test on ChatGPT. So first, there's a lot of business owners out there that think that they can use ChatGPT to write a privacy policy. My first suggestion to them is ask ChatGPT whether it should be writing your privacy policy, and it will tell you it really shouldn't. So I did a study where I compared different prompts. So I asked it to write me a privacy policy. I asked it to write me a privacy policy where I gave it some information of like what information I collect, all of that kind of stuff. I asked it to write me a GDPR compliant privacy policy. And unfortunately, none of those met the standard. So none of those were actually compliant or included all of the disclosures that were needed. Mm-hmm. And then I did one last test where I told it all of the privacy laws that apply to me, and I told it all of the disclosures that the privacy policy needs to contain, and I explained all of my privacy practices to it. And that's the only way in which it could actually write me a good privacy policy. The problem with that is that unless I'm a privacy attorney and I know all the laws that apply to me and I figured that out and I know all the disclosures that are required, otherwise it can't produce a compliant privacy policy for me. So essentially what that means is that, you know, it's helpful for attorneys possibly. But really, if you're a small business owner, unless you want to do years worth of research, it's not really worth your time. The one way in which I do use ChatGPT is like writing notes on greeting cards, you know, things like that, which I think is a great use for it. I do know people who use it to write like business emails and stuff that are a little bit more difficult to word. And I think that's a great way to do it. And I think some of our staff use it to write poems about privacy or something ridiculous that one of us recently got into.
Those don't make it out of Slack, though.
Yes, those definitely
make it out of Slack. Yeah, I personally, Donata kind of shared, yeah, we were able to get ChatGPT to draft a correct privacy policy, but only after we listed out all the disclosures. So, you know, ChatGPT would have to ask, you know, 10 to 50 plus questions to properly generate one. But it still doesn't answer the question of how do you update your privacy policy over time.
Right.
But aside from that, I just wanted to share that we are considering using ChatGPT primarily on the, like this concept, and I apologize, I don't have a ton of knowledge about it, but as I understand it, there's like a local storage option where you don't have to actually share the data you submit through it. And so if we weren't, you know, if our data was private to us, like we would be interested in utilizing it, especially for legal translations. Like obviously we'd want a legal translator to review human. What gets translated. Yeah. A human. That's the word. Yeah. To review it.
A legal translator, AKA human. Yes.
Oh, are we coming to this time, mm-hmm. to this era of humanity? But yeah, that interests us. So we're not against it. In fact, we've shockingly got a lot of customers from ChatGPT. We don't know how. It's just in the "how did you hear about us" message. We're noticing an influx of people saying ChatGPT. So I don't know. ChatGPT must like us.
I think it's interesting to note that there's quite a few data protection authorities looking into ChatGPT right now for GDPR noncompliance. And I believe that it is temporarily shut off in Italy as of this moment. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens in Europe with ChatGPT.
Yeah, I mean, just like anything else, it can be a good or bad thing depending on how you look at it and how you use it. In a sense, using it as a co-pilot and helping be more creative in whatever you do, I think is the best use of it. Not something that you would typically write like a school paper on and just copy and paste and send it into your teacher. That won't go well.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe don't give ChatGPT your social security number.
Right.
If you're an attorney, don't upload your client's private information onto there, because that could break attorney-client privilege, things like that.
That's a good point. Yeah. We were talking about, I mean, in healthcare in particular, I mean, that's probably the, Gabe and I have talked about this on many episodes, that's probably the most vulnerable area when it comes to these AI bots and ChatGPT, because, you know, we've seen cases overseas where, you know, a guy committed suicide using AI with something called Chai, I believe. I think it was third party. But like things like that, I feel like we're going to start seeing more and more. I don't think that it's the products to blame, but it is fascinating and interesting to see where this goes in terms of how companies or like those AI companies actually put guardrails on certain things where, like, I shouldn't be answering this. You should talk to a human about these health issues or whatever. So,
maybe it's my inner technologist, but if I'm being transparent, there's a lot of times when I trust technology more than I trust human beings, like a lot. Even down to like flying planes for the most part, right? Like, I'd rather the technology do it than someone who's only been flying a plane for, say, like a year, right? Like, maybe I want that guy landing the plane, but even then, I don't want him really landing the plane. My point is, though, that especially with large language models, and what we're talking about here is, well, it's an exercise in language, are we not? We're talking about describing something in words. It almost feels like we should be able to use large language models to achieve this objective. I completely understand that ChatGPT as it exists, well, it's a big box of Legos, right? Like, you still have to build things with it. And I think that's where the world is kind of getting confused. They're like, oh my God, look at these Legos. I love Legos. Like, me too. But if you just spread them out on the floor, they actually become more dangerous than if you like put them together and do something with them. Ah, yeah. That analogy I figured would hold up well, right? ChatGPT, the Legos on the floor you didn't know you had. And so my question is, as technologists yourself, or people that are attempting to solve this problem with technology, a combination of, I'm not hearing a complete dismissal of technology in that last series of answers, but I'm not really hearing, you know, like, we think that we can leverage large language models in the future to do blank. Do you think that there's just some inherent limitations to what a large language model can do, and so you're plowing ahead the way you've described, or is it just too early to know?
I would say that's fair. I mean, in theory, ChatGPT potentially could read the laws and make interpretations of those, because I was thinking, if ChatGPT is looking at other privacy policies and making a decision based on that, that's not going to help anyone, because, I mean, you know, we talked about earlier, you can't just copy someone else's website policies and think you are now compliant with the laws that apply specifically to you. Mm-hmm. So I would say that there would definitely have to be like an interaction, like ChatGPT would have to ask you questions. You can't get a privacy policy until you answer about 50, you know, conditional based questions. But is it possible? Yeah, I can't say that it's not. Yeah. From what I've seen, though, we're not close to it yet.
I think you're right, but I also think that at its current state, the way that it's set up, like, ChatGPT has issues with facts. So, for example, I know somebody...
Issues with facts. You are being generous. Issues with facts. it's a lie. It's a lie. For what it's worth, it doesn't understand facts. And I think that's part of the problem. In fact, the biggest issue it has with facts is it knows literally zero facts. It has information. Maybe better said, it has data, but it doesn't really know how to make data into information, right? Like, it just has a wealth of data. It has the ultimate issue with facts. It has no facts, none. It knows no facts.
Yeah, we had somebody at the ABA ask ChatGPT who is, and then they input their own name. And they said that they're a cardio surgeon out of New Hampshire whose wife is a gardener. None of those were correct. He's a lawyer in DC and has no wife.
Plot twist, he has a second wife who's a guy.
That's his second life. You know, he's a lawyer and then he's a surgeon. But yeah, it was just completely off. And I think especially when it comes to privacy policies, there are so many people who are starting off with the wrong assumption of, hey, this person's privacy policy looks good. Let me model mine after that. And I think that's what ChatGPT is doing. Mm. It's not looking at the actual law or what the law requires or no cases, rules, regulations, none of that. It's just saying, oh, here's 10,000 privacy policies. Let me just kind of combine them all into one that looks good. And yeah, it reads nice, right? Like, looks good. It reads nice. But if you actually look at it for compliance, it's nowhere near passing. And I think until that issue is fixed, I don't think it's going to be able to do anything apart from rephrase things that other people have already said.
Yeah. Speaking of rephrasing, that's something I really like because, you know, one of the goals of a privacy policy should be to be as legible as possible at as low of a reading level as possible.
Right.
And I think, you know, ChatGPT could really help break free some of the concerns people have about policies being too long in length, which it technically is actually a requirement that it should not be too long in length under some privacy laws. So I think that's a really good use case for one, is kind of opening
polishing,
up
the polishing of it. That makes sense. It sounds as though there's an exercise waiting to be done by someone like yourselves, maybe even of training that language model explicitly on the laws and, you know, a billion policies, whatever the case is.
Right. Yeah. But you have like each law, but then you have to combine them because most companies have to comply with multiple privacy laws. So then you have to teach it how to combine them as well, which can be really difficult for a human.
I think you're right, though. I think that is certainly a way one could go about it for sure, especially if every state gets 3 or 4 privacy laws per state. You know, California has 2. More and more states are passing their privacy laws. Like,
why does California have 2?
So they have CALOPA, which is an older privacy law, and then they have CCPA, CPRA.
Yeah.
And one does not supersede the other?
No. So one of them, CALOPA, is really, really old, you know, very low enforcement. And it was the initial privacy law that kind of just said, hey, you know, you're operating a business online, you're collecting the personal information of California residents. You need to have a privacy policy. Here's what it needs to say. And here's how it needs to be displayed. And then years later, as technology evolved, as privacy infringements evolved, all of those kinds of things, they decided to pass CCPA, which was a more comprehensive privacy law written by a property builder, but we won't go into that. So they came out with the CCPA, and then they decided to amend it to the CPRA.
Of course, California did.
Yeah,
I would expect nothing better from them. Yeah.
Fun fact: Quebec residents also have double the protections because Quebec Bill 64 passed,
and then Pipeta,
and then Paquita. Yeah,
I think California CCPA. I believe it was originally read, written, adopted, all of that in a total of 7 days. Which has got to be a record for close readings, that's for sure.
I remember they finished the revisions on Christmas Day, and it was going into effect 6 days later on the 1st. Those 6 days were rough. We were the only, I think we were the only generator in the world to get it done on time.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow. Yeah. So I have a, before I get to my, I guess, this would be a fun question, but I do have a serious question. But first, back on ChatGPT, can you guys think about in history back in the day, and Gabe, you can think about this too. Has there ever been anything like ChatGPT, not the same technology, but just something that has the same effect on the entire world like ChatGPT has? If you think back, has there ever been anything like this?
Well, my immediate reaction is the printing press, but that was, you know, hundreds of years ago. But the internet, yeah. But the printing press, I mean, that was the first time people got access to, you know, affordable material to read. And it raised people's ability. More and more people learned how to read because of it, and you know, it was obviously embraced. I heard this the other day. Don't bank on it, but I believe like people were super concerned at the beginning because people would be crossing the street reading books and they'd be like risking getting hit by a horse and buggy. So I don't know, maybe that's what our future is. We're just stuck to staring at ChatGPT, chatting with it.
Yeah, what's crazy is that you can look at newspapers throughout time and that's like a pattern that repeats consistently. Mm-hmm. Like, now people are, they think that everybody's too distracted with their phone. Well, before they thought they were too distracted with these, with books, you know, or too distracted with whatever they had way, way, way back. Rocks. Rocks, I don't know. But yeah, that's been going on since the beginning of time, as older people saying that younger people are too distracted with the newest technology.
What I would say what's kind of different these days, though, is the fact that like, we're much more of a single civilization and we're all witnessing something profound together. And we know it's profound and we know the facts that kind of history repeats itself in the sense that there's groundbreaking things. And like with those under, you know, with those in place, what is that going to mean for society?
Yeah.
And those are the things that keep me up at night. So I'll keep
speaking of horses. Could you imagine being in that time and like you get like a telegram or something from a girl or a guy and you have to hop on a horse to go see them? Like, that just blows. Like, I can't even imagine today's society having to do that without a car or a cell phone.
Just going to the grocery store, I'd be terrified.
That's true. Going back to Termageddon, what do you guys, what's your biggest challenge that you face today in today's world?
Well, I think it's the state patchwork of privacy laws, right? So in the U.S., you know, we have the federal privacy laws when it comes to financial, healthcare data, children's data, but not just regular data collected by websites like names, emails, phone numbers, things like that. And we're seeing every single state propose and pass their own privacy laws. And, you know, a lot of times you have to combine all of them as well. And then you get the law and then you get rules and regulations and cases and all of that interpretation as well. So keeping track of all of that is definitely a challenge. It's my job to do that here and I do enjoy it. But I'm sure not a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's like one in a million type situation going on there. So
that's a good point. I know that obviously privacy teams are very, I mean, they're getting, well, they don't usually have budget, number one, but it's good to see that more and more companies are building those out.
I do not have budget indeed. I've got another question before Cam comes back with more of those personal ones, though. It's related to your question, Cameron. And my answer right back, and it ties to something we've already talked about. The answer for me is Blogger, right? Why? We live in a very meta world, and I don't mean the company that attempts to rebrand themselves from Facebook. Not that world. That's a world I don't want to live in, by the way. I mean, none of us should. I don't care what their privacy policy says on their website, right? Like, that gets to my question. So let me give you all the things in my head. Blogger, what did Blogger do? It didn't just give the world the internet. The world had the internet, but we could just consume information. Blogger was one of the first platforms that made it really easy for anyone to publish information themselves, right? People themselves, individuals, you know, words like democratized publishing have come around. But basically what it means is anyone can say all kinds of things out there, including, you know, they can do things like put forums out there and collect information. Blogger made things like that really easy. The ability to get information, but more importantly, the ability to push information. Things like CCPA and GDPR seem to have push the needle forward on the controls part of it. Now I, as an individual, when I'm visiting your site, must acknowledge that I'm going to allow you to perform these types of activities. Whatever. You know, most people don't even read it. So that gets right to my privacy policy question though. So a layperson visits a website. Should they don't even know that you are supposed to have a policy, much less that you have one, much less that you enforce it. And so I find myself asking, right, like, why does it matter to the end users? You and I and us sitting here in admittedly our comfy little echo chamber, like, we know these things. But how does it really matter? What does it matter to everyone else?
Yeah. So I think as time goes on, more and more people will be educated. But you kind of mentioned right when you visit a website, you kind of see information, like kind of a blurb saying, hey, this is what we do with your data and so forth. Well, that's a cookie consent solution based on how you just described that. And, you know, I think a lot of people say it's annoying. It's right in the way of getting into the website, all that stuff. But
yes to all of it.
So I have felt the same way for a very long time. And granted, I am a little bit more in an echo chamber these days, but I think the average consumer will get to the point of understanding that, you know, if they're like a resident of the EU, for example, they have the right to not be tracked by default. They have the right to not have their data be shipped off to third-party companies who then sell that data by default. By default, a company can no longer track them. They have to, the user, the website visitor, gets a choice and gives the ability to give consent. And only then can they put tracking pixels on your website and like determine or decide whether to give you ads or not. So I do think that it is a mechanism to get consent. And yes, it's a little invasive to a lot of people. But I think as time goes on, the average consumer will realize, okay, this business is not up to something shady. Actually, they're going out of their way to comply with the laws that give me rights and give me the ability to say, my name is my name. My IP address is my IP address. My email is my email. You can't track me until I let you, company. And I don't know, I guess the overall concept of people's data is their property and not the property of a company, and companies can no longer do whatever they want with it. I do think that is something worth fighting for. I think that's something valuable. And I think consumers over time will learn that fact.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been a lot of studies done showing that consumers have an increased interest in privacy. You know, consumers are more likely to choose companies that respect privacy or switch from a company that doesn't respect their privacy to a company that does. And I think apart from these studies, if we really look at what's been happening in the U.S., more and more of these privacy laws being passed, well, legislators don't really do anything unless their constituents want them to do it, right? You know, if it was up to them, they would just sit there and eat bonbons all day.
Sounds good.
But yeah, but you do see more and more of these consumer rights groups and consumers themselves lobbying for privacy rights. And that's why we're seeing so many more privacy laws. And I think that's the fact that consumers care more about privacy in action. And that really came about, I believe, in the U.S., mostly through the Cambridge Analytica scandal, because that really opened up consumers' eyes to the fact that...
Are those the folks that were working with Meta, a.k.a. Facebook, to steal our... Yes. Right. Yeah. Those guys. Yeah.
That particular instance, because it showed consumers like, hey, I'm uploading my information here, and then I have no control over what happens to it next, right? Anything can happen to it. And I think that really opened up consumers' eyes to the importance of privacy. So I guess thank you, Meta or Facebook or whatever it's called now.
Let's not thank them too much.
So question for you guys. Obviously, you know, this will be based around privacy, but I'm just curious, before you got into this realm, was there something that triggered or an event that happened that made privacy very important to you personally? Or do you have something, you know, along the way that has... What privacy means to you guys personally?
Sure. So for me, my first interaction with privacy was the Target data breach. I believe that happened in 2008. And I had one of those Target credit cards. And I remember getting a letter in the mail saying that the information was breached And then it was, we'll give you credit monitoring. And I just remember being so confused because at the time I was, you know, pretty young. I didn't really understand, you know, what it meant to get a card and my personal information being held by a company and then that company being breached and what that meant for me. And I just remember getting like a really kind of icky feeling about it. Where I really thought, hey, Target's a huge company, like it's that's safe enough to get a card with them as it would be with anybody else. And I really, that kind of brought me into the idea that this information isn't necessarily really mine anymore because it can be breached by anybody else. So that was my first thought about privacy in general. And, it took me quite a few years to truly understand what it meant. But yeah.
For me, it was, I was just taking a privacy attorney. I just wanted to impress her. So I kind of jumped on board, honestly, from more of a commercial mindset, like, oh, we can make some money and this could be like a fun project together. Granted, we called the company Termageddon. We weren't expecting it to kind of like get to where it is today.
What does the name mean? I'm going to interrupt. I apologize. What is Termageddon?
Yeah, so Termageddon is a website policies generator. So it's a questionnaire that helps you figure out the laws that apply to you, and then the questionnaire adapts, asks you the questions necessary to generate policies for your website. And what's nifty about our tool is you get an embed code, which you copy and paste into the body of your policy pages. So now we can monitor privacy laws, notify you of changes, and even push automatic updates with newly required disclosures to the websites.
But Termageddon, we kind of... Terms of Service and Terminator, Armageddon.
Terms of Service and Armageddon.
And Terminator was already taken.
Terminator.com was already taken.
So Termageddon, it was a good name to trademark. Yeah. Very easy trademark to get because it's so specific and not an actual word. But
we just felt like privacy is a really big, scary conversation to a lot of people. So we wanted to at least break the ice a little bit with something fun, lighthearted. So our branding is just kind of like, hey, we're real people. Like, we're just trying to help here.
So I just had a really funny thought. It would be hilarious if you got one of those AI websites to generate what Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis would look like combined.
Don't do it. The world does not need that. Does not need this. Once you create it, you can't uncreate it. It will exist. Way to get it to unexist at that point. I'm going to have to veto this idea.
I'm just saying it could be like, you know, it could be like future company artwork. You could hang it up behind you.
We do have to be cautious though, because when I think Bruce Willis, I think Die Hard. When I think Die Hard, I think the bad guy in Die Hard, his name is Hans. So I have to be cautious of that stuff. Like, I can't introduce
that. I do think about Hans Gruber. Yes, he comes to mind frequently when that conversation. Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Hans Gruber is, he did nothing wrong, might I add.
All right, since we're on that topic, is Die Hard a Christmas movie or no? Okay.
It is. Okay.
Yeah,
it
is.
It absolutely
is. That's the right answer. Good for you. That's the right answer. We will indeed publish this podcast.
It's Die Hard and Elf.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Christmas Vacation for me as well. It's a solid one. It never gets old. Before I move on to our last set of questions, do you guys have anything that you want to bring up that we didn't bring up? Anything else that you wanted to promote or talk about?
This has been really enjoyable. Awesome. Yeah, this has been great. If you need policies, check out Termageddon, but that's not why we're here today. We're just here to talk about picture stuff.
So first question, this should be entertaining. So for each of you, who was your first celebrity crush?
Oh, gosh.
Megan Fox, Transformers.
That's a good one.
Oh, that's a good one. So I grew up in Eastern Europe, so this
Mr.
is not
going
to be great, but I remember
Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean.
No, even though I did love Mr. Bean. No, but we had this political show where two guys dressed as mice and, they had little like whiskers painted on their face. And when I was little, I thought one of them was kind of cute and he was really funny. So.
That was the most adorable thing I've ever heard. Oh, if we're going that far back. I'm going to change it to April from Teenage.
There you go. The cartoon or the original movie?
The cartoon.
No. I was going to say, don't qualify that. I was going to go with the cartoon. I'm glad he said that anyway, because that's what I was going to stick with. Like, my brain wanted to hear.
There's nothing wrong with having a crush on a cartoon. Nothing at all.
Look.
It's normal. It's okay. Especially when you're a kid. So what is one app on your phone that you use every day, but you absolutely dislike?
Instagram.
Fair.
Easily. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Squad Alpha. I'm playing this game on my phone and I can't get away from it. I like go on a bathroom break.
Wait, so, like Squad minutes. Alpha.
So yeah.
Explain
what about that one?
So that maybe
no, that. men like to just go in there and get an escape usually, or just some quiet time. Yeah.
Hang out.
Yeah.
Some private time.
There you go. Speaking of private time, do you guys have the toilet paper on the top or the bottom?
We are toilet paperless.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Look at that.
The right answer. Sir, your poor cats must hate it, but I like that answer.
our pets would not go in the bathroom for months. It was awesome.
Yeah, they were scared of the toilet, actually, because it like opens on its own. So they were terrified of it. It's great.
But for the record, the answer to that question is, of course, it goes open.
There's only one. There's two types of people in this world. We know this.
That's right. Those who put it over and those who like chaos.
Yes, exactly.
One last one for you. If you could choose one superpower, what would it be and why?
Okay, this is not a superpower at all because like more than 50% of the population have it, but 20/20 vision. Dang, so I don't have to wear glasses all the time.
Not 40/20 or something like that?
Nope, just regular 20/20 vision, so I wouldn't have to wear glasses. That would be me.
Yeah, I'm right. I would like to learn things a lot faster than I currently learn. You know, after marrying Donata and seeing how fast she can read a book, like I'm not built for that. And I love learning, but I just move at a glacier's pace. So I would say like, you know, like those things like where people like flip a book and then they understand the entire book. I would say
I
would love for that to be my superpower.
Those are the lamest superpowers of all time.
Yeah, that's true.
But I was going to say, both of those are pretty realistic superpowers.
You two may be the most practical guests we've ever had on. You've given a number of answers that just feel way too practical. Right?
We definitely practiced 1,000 times before.
Dream medium.
Dream realistic.
Not dream.
Well, we wanted to thank you both for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it and appreciate what you do. So thank you again and hope you guys had a great time.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
So nice talking to people in our space where we can have like higher level
discussions. Same. Well, you guys take care and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, you guys made it all the way to the end. Thanks for listening. Again, if this is your first time, we really appreciate the support and everyone that's always been around since the beginning. We love you guys. Keep supporting Privacy Please, and we'll always have new content each and every week. Cameron Ivy, over and out.